So we started up again. After again, the laughter had dissipated, and we just lay there, exhausted, his head leaning on my bare bicep. I glanced down at his flat chest, where there'd be breasts if he was Hannah, but he was most certainly, definitely not Hannah. "You're flat," I said, and he raised an eyebrow. It sounded like I thought he had no muscles, which wasn't true. "Nipples. Why do guys even have nipples?" I asked. "I know, right?" "Nipples. Nipples. It's such a stupid word." Rafe laughed. "Nipples. Nipples?" I laughed back. "It sounds like a clown's name. Nipples the clown. He'd wear, like, a nipple hat. Look at me! I'm Nipples the clown!" I crossed my arms over my chest. We hadn't used ours, and I wasn't sure guys even did. How would I know what guys do? I knew Hannah liked being touched gently there. I said, "I mean, with girls, sexually, and anyway, for girls, they're for feeding a child. What do boys' nipples even do?" Rafe sat up and looked down at my chest. We were both laughing a bit, and then we weren't. I slowly uncrossed my arms. Rafe brought his hands up to my midsection, and then higher. He placed the lowest parts of the palms of his hands in the ever-so-slight ridges under my chest. Then he gently pressed forward until each hand was cupping a peck. Then his fingers drummed my collarbone slowly, thumb to pinky, one time. He pressed his hands forward, and when his hands came to rest and the center of his palms came into contact with the little pink lobes, I gasped. And from that moment on, we never had to wonder what a nipple was for again. After again, we talked. A long, long time we talked. I told him every feeling I'd ever had, and he shared with me all his. "I don't know. I still don't feel like I'm gay," I said. "What a thing to say to a guy after sex." "No, really. Maybe you're bi? I feel like I'm more, like, gay for Rafe." He put his hand on his heart. "Sincerely flattered to be a sexual orientation now, thank you." I laughed. "I'm just going with it now, you know? All's I know, as Donnelly would say, is that I love you, and you are a boy." "I am." We were quiet for a bit. "I guess I don't really get why you don't think you're bi, though." "Well, to me, bi means attracted to both boys and girls. I'm attracted to girls, and Rafe, there's a difference." He shrugged. "I guess. No, the truth is, I don't actually get that. But I love you, and I don't need to get that. Maybe someday I will."
"I hope so."
"In the GSA, the guys joke about bisexuality like it's a gateway to gay. Like that's a stop on the train for kids who aren't ready to deal. I don't actually believe that. I think some people are bi, definitely."
"Me too."
"I think it's a continuum."
"Me too," I said.
He lay back down and placed his head in the crook of my armpit. I was sure there were better places in the world to be, but he didn't say anything.
"Is it possible you're just at the gateway of the gateway?"
"I truly don't think that's it. But yeah, anything's possible." I closed my eyes, and I didn't have to look to know he had too. So we fell asleep like that, together, like two boys against the world. Chapter 35. Rafe's overnight disappearances had been duly noted by Albie and Toby. We spent basically all Saturday in my room, and when we arrived at Albie's room Sunday morning to go to breakfast as a group, Albie and Toby had set up a circle of chairs. They were in two of them, and they wordlessly pointed to two empty seats for us to sit in. Once we were all seated, Toby pulled a piece of paper out of his pocket.
You're clearly having sex relations with each other, and that impacts me in the following ways, Toby said.
Rafe cracked up. Is this an intervention? Toby nodded solemnly and continued with his reading.
One, I would like to be having sex relations, and yet I am not. Two, when you were busy having sex relations, and I tried to walk in on you, your door was locked. This made me think I was unwelcome to be part of your sex relations, which made me feel unwanted. Three, if there truly is something gossip-worthy going on, I would like to know about it.
Toby makes some excellent points, Albie said, surprising me. Not about wanting to be part of your sexual relations because, ew, but in the fact that there is obviously a good story here because, as we are all well aware, you were boinking last Thanksgiving, and then you weren't, and you weren't even friends, and then Ben had a date to the dance, and the date was female, and then this. It feels as if there's something you're not telling us.
I pleaded the fifth, as there was no chance in hell I would be discussing my personal life with two psychopaths. I may have changed some, but there were still limits. Rafe, on the other hand, upon noting my hesitance, stage whispered, "Tell you later," to the guys, who both nodded in anticipation. As we walked across the quad, Toby glanced over at Albie and then back at us.
"Can I be serial for a second?"
"I don't think so," Albie said. "I think you can either be a shapeshifter and turn into serial forever, or you will need to remain in your current form. Those are your choices."
Toby ignored him.
"I'm actually a little freaked out about coming out as gender fluid, which I'm pretty sure I'm gonna do."
Rafe said,
"It's a lot. Of course you're freaked."
I wanted to ask again, why come out? It was hard enough being a little different at Natick. Why would a person step into the firing zone by telling the mostly juvenile boys at an all-boys school that sometimes you're a girl? But also, I knew. He'd already told me. It was just hard for me to wrap my head around it.
"It's the fluid part," Toby said. "That's the part I'm really freaked about. I mean, it would be one thing to be like, I'm transitioning and my name is Tina, but I'm just telling people that I'm in flux, which is hard. It's putting it on a platter and saying, here's my confusion. Feel free to pick it apart."
The wet grass squished under our feet as we walked in silence. The thing about coming out, it seemed to me, was vulnerability, putting whatever it was that people might judge on a platter. Most of my life, I'd been figuring out ways to armor up, to make myself impervious to attack. That's what we do, humans, but especially carvers. Don't put yourself out there. Hold yourself back and protect. Don't be vulnerable. And my mind flashed on Hannah, which didn't feel so good, so I stopped thinking about that.
"I think you're amazing," I said to Toby.
"Truly. And if anyone gives you shit, you let me know." Rafe elbowed me in the side in a gentle way, as if to say thanks. Albie broke the silence.
"I think it's okay to just say who you are without it being final or something. I mean, none of us are finished products. We change. We keep changing. We won't be finished products till the day we die."
That made me think about my dad. I was pretty sure he saw himself as a finished product. Was I? Chapter 36. Things went into hyperspeed on Monday of the final week before spring break. I had my big calculus test on Tuesday, which meant an all-nighter, and some prayers that I'd do well enough. There was packing to do for break and the trip to Fort Lauderdale, a few more tests and lab reports. My parents were to arrive on Thursday. And then I had my speech on Friday, so long as I didn't screw up the math test too badly. And after the weekend I'd had, the biggest thing was that I knew who I was. I had Rafe. Maybe I wasn't quite ready for the team to know all my business or to share it with my family, but at least I knew, and that had to count for something. In calculus class on Monday, we had a final study session for the test, and in reality, I didn't fully understand what Ms. Dyson was saying about formal manipulation of the Taylor series, let alone the shortcuts to computing it. But at least I had one night left to figure it out.
"So, starting with this test," Ms. Dyson said, "we're going to do things a little differently. Since we're trying to get you prepared for the AP exam, the tests will have more multiple-choice questions than you can possibly answer. I just want you to answer as many as you can, as fast as you can, okay?"
A kid named Cal raised his hand.
"Do we need to show our work?"
She shook her head.
"Just the correct answer will be enough."
There was murmuring throughout the classroom, and all I was thinking about was how it would feel to not be able to answer all the questions. I'd be freaked out until she returned the tests, which was not what I needed, not with my parents coming and the final touches on my papa's award speech staring at me. I felt these butterflies in my chest as we packed up our bags and left the room, and I tried to talk myself out of them. Yes, if the test was this very minute, I'd probably fail or get a D. But I had a vague idea of most of the concepts she was discussing in class, and with a good 5 or 6 hours of studying, I'd be able to figure it all out. Probably. Ms. Dyson beamed at me as I walked out.
"Study hard, Ben," she said.
"I will."
Heading to dinner, I caught up to Rafe on the quad. We'd been too busy to see each other all day.
"Hey, handsome," he said.
"Hey, you get your history homework done?"
"Yes, mother," he said.
"Good, because we have exactly 2 hours after dinner to hang out. Then it's calc time for me all night long."
"Sounds like a partay," he said.
"Perchance," I said, and I caught a glimpse of the baseball guys coming out of the dorm to head toward the cafeteria.
"Teammates," I said. "Got a jet."
Rafe rolled his eyes.
"Did you just say, got a jet?"
"Hey," I said, "this is the new improved don't give a rat's ass, Ben. You know, it doesn't take a rocket surgeon to figure this all out."
He cracked up.
"Huh, different. I like it. I'll go find the boys. We will miss you terribly all meal long. Have a wonderful time bonding with Steve Nicholson."
Other than the fact that he's an asshole, he's basically okay. The guys weren't close enough to hear quite yet.
"Enjoy. Love you."
The longer we stood there, the closer the guys got. I felt a bubble growing in my throat.
"Uh-huh. See ya,"
I said to Rafe, and then I hurried over to my teammates.
"Hey, guys, what's up?"
"What up, Carver?" Mendenhall said. "You're gonna sit with us and not your little gay buddies?"
"You're just jealous because gay guys, and straight females, I might add, find you disgusting."
He punched me in the shoulder.
"If I'm disgusting, what the hell are you?" he asked.
Dinner was fun, truth be told. We talked about the tournament in Florida. I'd be rooming with Standish, which was fine with me. I just wanted to get down there, get on the outdoor field, and play some ball after all this indoor practice. When I got back to my room, Rafe was already on his bed reading. His feet were kicked up on the wall, which he was facing, his body at a 90-degree angle.
"Did you miss me?" I asked.
He didn't answer.
"Hey,"
I said.
He didn't answer again. "Earth to Rafe."
He kicked his feet down from the wall and turned to face me. His eyes were a little red.
"Whoa," I said. "What happened?"
"We need to talk," he said.
Chapter 37. Rafe sat on the floor, his back against the bed. I did the same with my bed. We both stretched out our legs, but there was still a gulf of about a foot between us.
"I love you, Ben. I really, really love you."
I didn't like the numb feeling that began to radiate in my cheeks.
"I know. I love you too." "I've never loved anyone close to as much as I love you. But I can't. I mean..."
"What?" I asked. "You're freaking me out." He rubbed his eyes.
"Before dinner,
When you said goodbye to me, I said I love you. You said, uh-huh.
Oh, come on, I said. Obviously I love you too. Do I have to say it every 5 minutes?
No, but you didn't say it because your baseball buddies were right there. How did I not realize this was going to happen? Maybe I didn't want to see it, but I need to be loved by someone who is willing to love me openly.
I stared at the bottom of Rafe's shoe. I just sat there for a while.
Say something, please.
God, this is so fast. Can't I get a little time to adjust and figure it out? I'm a private person, Rafe. I don't tell everyone my business, and I sure as hell don't want the baseball team to know. I mean, they're idiots. Why would I give them ammunition? He crossed his arms over his chest.
You're ashamed of me. You're ashamed to be dating me.
I'm not ashamed, I said, crossing my arms too.
Sure you are. If you weren't, you'd be taking me to a dance in front of all of your buddies, like you did with Hannah.
Do I really need to dance with you in public to show you I love you?
I've been with 3 guys in my life. Not a single one of you was willing to date me openly. I'm tired of being everyone's secret, Ben. I want to be loved proudly by you, okay?
I shook my head.
Wow. What does wow mean?
I shook my head some more.
Are you aware of all the tightropes I'm walking? I'm going to lose this award if I don't study tonight. My parents are about to come down here, and that's really stressful.
He frowned.
What does that have to do with me? Don't do this right now before a test, for God's sake. Do what?
I can't... You can't keep doing this, Rafe. Pulling me in different directions. You're asking me to be someone I'm not. I can't do what you're asking me to do. You know I'm not about to parade you around. What if my parents found out? My dad would disown me. I just need a little time. He shook his head.
You know what? It's not like I don't understand that and feel bad for you about it, but I can't hide that way anymore.
So what does that mean?
He shrugged. It means what it means.
I felt the anger rise into my shoulders. You couldn't have told me that before I fell in love with you, maybe?
I didn't really know, he said. I didn't really know until you answered, I love you, with uh-huh. Then it became real clear.
Wow.
Ben, he said, I told you, I love you. I could see being with you forever. But you don't get to forever in secret. I need more.
I'm not even sure I'm gay. I'm supposed to come out just because we're dating?
You can come out as bi.
I didn't want to have this conversation again. I wasn't even sure I was bi. What would I be announcing anyway? He put his head in his hands. He kept them there, and I thought for a second he was crying, but then he took them off, and I realized he'd just been thinking.
Could you, like, imagine getting there? Soon? I don't want to lose you again.
I closed my eyes. I tried to imagine discussing Rafe with the entire baseball team.
Why the hell would I do that? It didn't make sense to me. But I couldn't say that to Rafe,
and I couldn't even tell him a little white lie. We'd talked a lot about lies. I opened my eyes. I really don't know, I said honestly. He sighed.
You're not ready, he said. Go find Hannah. Go, I don't know. We'll be like besties again. I can't do it. I can't be your dirty secret. Sorry.
He got up and left me sitting with my back against my bed, my legs splayed out in front of me. Each limb suddenly felt like 1,000,000 pounds. I wasn't even gonna try to move them. What was the use? The longer I sat there, the more tense I got, thinking about what I was facing. Last semester, Rafe had come to talk to me about our relationship the night before a history exam. Now he'd done it again with calculus. I was supposed to pull an all-nighter, and that was the last thing I felt like doing right now. I sat there frozen, thinking about what I wanted. I wanted Rafe. I also wanted the award and scholarship. To get Rafe, I would have to be someone other than me,
because it sure as hell didn't feel normal to me to imagine openly being a couple with him. To get the award and scholarship, I'd have to study my ass off when all I felt like doing was shutting my eyes and disappearing. I'd also have to give a false speech because I knew that Peter Pappas wasn't the person the school was making him out to be. Pappas. He'd been a lot like me, just with bigger stakes. Just like me, he tried so hard to make everyone happy, and in the end, no one was happy. Least of all, him. It had killed him. I shook my head hard. When would I get to stop sacrificing to make other people happy? When would that happen? And how the hell was I going to forget about everything that was going on and study for this stupid test? The answer was, I wasn't going to do that. I lay down in my bed and closed my eyes, allowing all the sensations in my body and all the thoughts in my brain to pour over me. I was tired, dead tired of everyone wanting something from me, myself included. All my life, I'd wanted so much from me, and it was never, ever enough. I was tired of trying, and my brain spun off its axis, and I pictured it flying away like a remote control helicopter that I couldn't quite control. After about an hour of this, knowing my future hinged on this night of studying, I finally opened my calculus book. The equations in Chapter 11 looked like hieroglyphics. Polar and vector functions put me over the edge, and it felt like the knowledge was leaking from my brain. The different symbols all mushed together. I found myself breathing too fast, and my head was beginning to feel dizzy. I had so much to lose. If I got a C plus or worse on my math test, I could kiss my B average in that class goodbye, and with it, my award and my scholarship, which was pretty much like saying everything in my life. My parents would be told not to come down for the ceremony, and my dad would be so disappointed in me. And who knew what other college we'd be able to afford, what kinds of scholarships I'd qualify for? No, not doing well on the test was not an option. Nothing had ever been so important. I forced my eyes open wide and stared at the book, willing it all to make sense. It just didn't. None of it. Come on, I yelled at myself out loud. Do it! We're carvers. We work hard. The functions and equations in the book on my lap just stared back at me smug, laughing at me, judging me. I stood up, enthralled by an idea. No. No way. Absolutely no way. Bad idea. Terrible idea. That was wrong. That went against everything I believed in. If I did that, I'd hate myself. But I pictured my dad, shaking his head at me when the news of my grade got to him. I imagined listening to Mike Scalia, the alternate Pappas Award winner, give my speech, aware that he was getting my scholarship. No. That was even more wrong. I took a deep breath, stood up, and took a slow walk down the hall, trying to talk some sense into myself. But there was no sense here. It was a no-win situation.
Hey, Mendenhall said when he answered the door. What's up, Carver?
Shit, I said, shaking my head. I heard you have the test keys. He smiled and waved me into his room. Chapter 38. The next morning, I walked in a haze to calculus, where I sat down, unable to look at anyone, and waited for my test. The multiple-choice answers were chiseled onto my pencil in tiny writing. I'd cheat on this one test, and then before the next one, I'd get back on track. I even decided I'd get a few wrong so as not to seem too perfect. Nothing to make my grade lower than a B+, but nothing too good to arouse suspicion either, especially when I went back to not cheating. After the test, I trudged back to the dorm, even though I had history next. I sank into my bed and let this flimsy blue feeling crest over my head like a wave. I felt utterly unable to handle any little thing, and I just wanted to stay there forever, buried under the current as it rushed over me. I was now a cheater. A cheater. Me. Rafe was gone. We were over. And why? Because I wouldn't say I love you in front of my baseball team?
He couldn't give me a week or two to get comfortable with our new situation. It felt like he'd burrowed his way into my heart again and then smashed it, and I'd let him do it again. Rafe said we could go back to being best friends, but I didn't work like that. My heart hurt. It actually hurt. Too much stuff in my brain, along with the fact that I was now officially alone and a cheater. Lab reports were never ending, and there was another one due in 2 days. History essay due tomorrow, undone. Baseball practice later, where I had to be a leader and be tough. My parents arriving in the morning, and they'd spend the day going to classes with me, and I'd be unprepared, and that would be really bad. My speech, it was ready, but it wasn't ready because I felt like a fraud every time I practiced it. It was a lie. Too many things. I lay back on the bed. My dad never missed a day of work in his life. I must be the laziest person in the history of the world. Everybody thought of me as solid and strong, but if they saw me now, they'd know the real me. And that was so terrifying that I got under the covers. And then the weirdest thing happened. My eyelids got as heavy as the rest of me, and I let them close, and I let the world disappear. I went to sleep. My eyes crept open when the clock said 10:17 and I realized it was chemistry class time. I wasn't one to skip classes ever. As of Friday, I would be the Peter Pappas Award winner. All-around good guy and scholar and athlete. Award winners and all-around good guys don't cheat, and they don't just sleep through the day. I closed my eyes again. And even though my brain wasn't that sleepy, I willed myself into oblivion. There was a knock on the door. I opened my eyes. 11:29. It was almost lunchtime. Shit, I mumbled, and I stumbled to the door, bleary-eyed. I opened the door and saw Coach Donnelly. You sick, Carver? I didn't feel like lying. I shook my head. What's up? I give up, I said. Donnelly stared at me like I was speaking another language. You give up? What are you talking about? Everything, I said. I can't do it anymore. You can't do it anymore? I walked back over to my bed and sat down. Right. What can't you do anymore? Any of it. All of my life, I've been told what I need to be, and I can't be it. It's too much. Donnelly looked around my room. I'm reminded of the great philosophical debate about a tree falling in the forest, he said. This got my attention. Oh, yeah? He smiled like he was happy to have an audience. You see, a tree fell in the forest, and then, well, nobody was there to hear it. So the question is, did it fall? Yes, I said. I didn't have the patience to humor him. Ah, but how do you know? Because you just told me. A tree fell in the forest. But no one was there to hear it, he said. So how did you know it happened? I asked. He looked confused for a second, and then he recovered and said, Exactly. I might have been making it up. That's the thing, Carver. All's you gotta remember is don't believe everything you hear. Maybe somewhere along the way you believed something that wasn't true. You bought into it, and now it's yours. That's all I'm trying to say to you. I stared at him. Someone should confront Coach Donnelly, I thought. Just shake him and tell him to stop, to please stop. Thanks, I said. Don't mention it, he said. And get to class this afternoon, okay? I don't need my star third baseman and team captain getting into trouble before the Florida trip. He left. I lay back down and I wondered where Rafe was. He was the one person who would get what I was feeling. Well, Bryce, too, but Rafe was my boyfriend. Wait, no, he wasn't. Shit, because I was a wuss, because I was afraid of what people thought. If I just let people know, if I ran down to the quad, found Rafe, spun him around, and kissed him in public, what would happen? I laughed. The world would end. Wait, would it? My dad's voice was loud in my head as I lay there in bed, revisiting my problem again and again. Don't embarrass me, Ben.
Stop being so lazy. You're sitting on your ass, wasting your time, thinking about a bunch of foolishness. You're being stupid and lazy. Buck up and get to work. We're Carver men. We work. We work hard.
All my life I'd heard these voices and I'd heeded them. I'd railed against myself again and again. You're stupid. You're lazy. And now I heard Donnelly's voice.
Maybe you bought into something, and now it's yours.
This funny, murky feeling had invaded my head. Maybe against all odds, Donnelly was right after all. What if what I'd bought from my dad? What if the biggest purchase I'd made in my life was a soundtrack of negative thoughts about myself that I'd played nonstop? And what if it was indeed now mine? Shit. How could Donnelly be right?
Chapter 39. At lunch, I sat silently with the team, focused on my ham steak and sweet potatoes. I couldn't possibly joke today, and I wondered if Mendenhall noticed and thought it was about the cheating. It was, partially. Did this happen to everyone who cheated? Steve had certainly seemed pretty stoked when he showed me the A on his test. I definitely wasn't going to be celebrating whatever I got in calculus. That's when Albie and Rafe entered the cafeteria. I saw them out of the corner of my eye, and this sad feeling pounded at my chest. Behind them was Toby. He wore a beige and pink pocketed skirt and a white blouse with dangling earrings, eye makeup, and a little blush on his cheeks. He'd shaved his legs. It was hard not to stare at him with an open mouth, not just because he looked so different, but because it was 37 degrees outside. The room didn't go quiet all at once, like in the movies. It went quiet in waves, like the volume dropped by half, and then another quarter, and then some more, until everyone was staring at him. He walked from table to table with a stack of flyers. Rafe and Albie fanned out to other parts of the cafeteria. Toby came to our table and Steve said under his breath,
"What the serious fuck?"
Toby ignored it and handed me the leaflet. It was a headshot of him, made up. It read, "Announcing the coming out of Toby Rylander, age 16, as gender fluid." Underneath, there was a Q&A section. Q. Is Toby trying to get attention? A. No. I mean, Toby likes attention, but this is about being true to his gender orientation. Q. What is gender orientation? A. Gender is complicated. Some people are male, some people are female, and others feel somewhere in between. It changes. Sometimes Toby feels male. Other times he's female. Q. Who cares? A. I wrote this so that you would understand. You can care or not care. I don't care. Q. What should I know? A. You should know that Toby is fine being called a he, a she, or a they. Some people have preferred pronouns, but Toby is happy to be called any of the above, though if she's obviously dressed female, she prefers she or they. Also, Toby, who here refers to him, her, themselves in the third person, is not a freak. He, she, they are a human being with feelings. If you hurt his feelings, he will feel sad. Also, if you are cruel to her, you'll get in trouble with the school, which is fully aware of Toby's gender orientation and is fine with it. If you touch them in a violent or inappropriate way, you will be kicked out of school. Q. What else should I know? A. Toby knows this is confusing to a lot of people who don't know what gender fluidity is. He gets it, and he'll be patient with you so long as you try.
As I read it, my heart soared, and I couldn't help but smile. It was so Toby. I felt a little choked up, actually. I wasn't ready for my teammates to see me cry, but I was ready for them to see me support him. So I said to Toby, "Cool, you be you," and I passed the leaflet to the guy seated next to me, who was Zach. Noise started up again, and the coolest thing happened. A couple guys started pounding their fists on their tables. It started really softly, but soon it picked up, and I watched Toby put his hands over his mouth, clearly moved by the support. He started crying, and Albie gave him a hug and Rafe, too.
"Fucking crazy shit," Zach said above the din of the table thumps.
Our table wasn't doing it. I ignored the comment, walked across the cafeteria to Toby, and hugged him tight. And damned if a bunch of other guys didn't do the same. Chapter 40. At practice on Wednesday, I took a lot of shit.
"Yo, Carver, is your friend aware that this is an all-boys school?"
Mendenhall said as he warmed up playing soft toss with Zach. I shrugged. I was busy throwing with Steve, and I was truly uninterested in discussing the little I knew about gender fluidity with a bigoted idiot.
"He'll get special treatment, too," Zach continued. "Just watch."
"Yep," Mendenhall said. "The freaks always get special treatment. Meanwhile, the normal people get fucked, of course."
I held the ball and turned to Mendenhall.
"Are you really serious right now?"
I asked. He shrugged.
"Why wouldn't I be?
Do you have any idea what privilege is?"
He rolled his eyes.
"I'm sure you'll tell me, Professor."
I shook my head.
"You're an asshole. You think he's lucky to be gender fluid at an all-boys school? That has to be the hardest thing I can imagine."
"Toby's imagining something hard," Zach said.
I turned to him.
"What are you three? Seriously, guys, grow up. You think it's easy? I'm sorry, but that's fucking stupid."
"I'm tired of your mouth," Mendenhall said, taking his glove off his left hand. I punched my glove.
"Well, which is it? I don't talk enough, or I talk too much? Make up your mind so I can figure out who the hell I need to be."
"Fuck you," Mendenhall said.
"Fuck you back. Are you ready to practice? You ready to close your mouth and get serious? Because we have a game in less than a week. You in, or are you out?"
And Mendenhall stopped talking and put his glove back on his hand, and I felt a surge in my chest.
"And by the way, no more talking shit about Toby. I'm not going to listen to that. Got it?"
No one said anything.
"Good," I said.
Rafe, Toby, and Albie were in my room when I got back after practice. Toby was wearing the same skirt, and he was sitting cross-legged on my floor, his shaved legs smooth as a baby's. Rafe had commandeered my bed, and Albie was on the other one. Seeing Rafe in my room was confusing. He'd said we could go back to being best friends just like that. And now he looked all casual, like he'd already made that switch, but I wasn't even close to there. But I was too tired to do anything other than pretend everything was fine. I chuckled.
"Make yourself at home," I said.
"I wanted to see this incredible closet you have," Albie said.
"I've heard reports, but have never had the opportunity."
"I should charge $10 per showing," I said.
Rafe jumped off my bed, walked to the closet, and made a big show of presenting it. He slowly opened the door, pulled the string for the light, and said, "Ta-da!"
"Oh, my," Albie said. "That's intense."
"Laugh it up," I said. "I can see things, and at least I don't have half-eaten candy bars on my closet floor."
I nodded at Toby. He sucked his cheeks in.
"Of all the days to compare my closet to yours," he said.
And Rafe said,
"Boo, leading statement. I'll ask the jury to disregard."
I rolled my eyes. "Subtle," I said.
"Can you guys give us a sec?"
Rafe asked. Toby and Albie nodded and left the room. Rafe sat down on the other bed, and he tapped the spot next to him. I tentatively sat there. My body felt warm, being so close to him again.
"You ready for your parents?"
he asked.
"Never."
"Yeah, I'm not envying you. How about your speech?"
I closed my eyes and shook my head.
"Ready, but not ready, you know? How'd your test go?"
I gave him a thumbs up and averted my eyes. There was no way I was ever going to be able to tell Rafe about my cheating. That was going in the vault.
"I feel bad,"
he said. I shouldn't have done that to you. You were right. I wanted what I wanted, like, immediately. That wasn't fair to you.
He put his hand on my shoulder and leaned the side of his head on top of it. I just sat there and let the feeling of his warmth run through me. Rafe. My Rafe.
Thanks, I said. Thank you for saying that. I was really down when you left last night.
I know, me too.
And I know it's not fair to you either, but can you slow down, like, a bit? This is a lot.
I can, he said. Love you, Ben.
My facial muscles relaxed. I hadn't realized it, but I'd been tense in my face all day until that moment.
Love you more, I said, and I turned to face him, and our lips met lightly, and we stayed connected like that for what felt like forever, and I was home again.
Chapter 41. Having my parents in my room, the same room in which I'd slept with Rafe the night before, was weird. I kept glancing around to see if there were any signs of Rafe's presence.
You have this all to yourself, Mom said, looking at all the space.
Yep. After Bryce left, they didn't put anyone else in here with me.
That must be nice, she said.
Yep.
And have you made any new friends?
Give it a rest, Marlene, my dad said. The boy's an award winner, captain of the baseball team. Of course he has friends.
It was nice to have his approval, but something about him saying this made me want to correct him. It's been only okay in terms of all that, I said. The baseball guys, for instance, we're kind of friends, but I'm nothing like them. I hang out with other kids who I like better. My dad looked out the window and frowned.
This is why I didn't want you going to a rich kid's school like this. Those kids will smell the stink of the farm on you.
I took a deep breath as I felt his words press down on my chest. I gave my parents the grand tour. I took them to math class, where Ms. Dyson welcomed them warmly and then gingerly placed a paper in my hands. My calculus test. A minus. My heart jumped, and then I remembered that I wasn't seeing an achievement so much as a ruse.
I told Headmaster Taylor this morning, Ms. Dyson said. You're good to go, Pappas Award guy.
I smiled. Thanks. We went to all my morning classes. My parents didn't have much to say about them. Dad, for one, seemed a little less opinionated, maybe, than usual. Instead of making comments about the ostentatiousness of the campus, he seemed downright awed by the plaques in the hallway of the Arthur Building.
For each Pappas winner, huh?
Yep.
That's some beautiful wood, he said.
I smiled. That was what I always thought when I walked through the hallway, but I never heard anyone else at Natick say it. Maybe that was one really good thing about coming from my family. I never for a second took for granted anything about my education or the incredible institution that was the Natick School. We wandered out onto the quad after chemistry. It was a reasonably warm day, and I decided to take them down to the waterfront where we could sit at one of the picnic tables and rest a little. Toby was out making sun angels on the grass, which were basically like snow angels except there was no snow, and it was sunny out. He was wearing a different skirt and hoop earrings. I'd seen him do this a week earlier, only in men's clothing. I knew my dad would have a comment about Toby's appearance, and I hoped he'd at least be polite and save it for private. Rafe and Albie were with him, and my heart jumped. I lightly waved over to Rafe, who smiled my way. Rafe was teaching Albie stage combat, which was something he'd done back in Boulder. He tried to teach me a few weeks earlier. Stage combat is how actors portray violent acts in movies and on stage. The move he taught me was a face punch, where the puncher actually punches his other hand to make the smack noise, and the punchee whips his head around so that it looks like he's absorbed the punch. I followed the directions, but never really felt like we'd be fooling anyone if we did it in front of an audience.
So, when I lunge my fist at your stomach, you pull your stomach in and grab my fist, and you say, oof,
Rafe said to Albie, who was faced the other way and couldn't see us.
You're asking Albie to pull his stomach in? Do you have a crane?
Toby yelled from his prone sun angel position. Albie gave him the finger.
You should be doing this with Toby. More people want to hit Toby,
Albie said. I smiled but said nothing as we walked by.
Oh, please, Albie. You're way more hittable than I am. People find me delightful. The focus groups we hired found you derivative and sophomoric.
Jesus, my dad muttered once we'd passed them. Them boys play for the other team, don't they?
I glanced back at my friends, and then I turned away from them and kept walking with my folks.
Only straight bones in this family,
Dad said, and something broke in me. Something Hannah had said to me came to mind, the thing about vulnerability. Either you do vulnerability, or it does you. She'd been right, hadn't she? Because I could pretend that what he just said hadn't hurt me deep inside, but that's all it was. Pretend. I stopped walking. I turned to my dad and opened my mouth to speak.
Has anything ever really made you laugh, Dad? I asked. Like really laugh? Uncontrollable laughter?
He frowned.
What is this? What kind of question is that?
I just wondered, I said, and we started walking again, and I realized there was nothing more that could come out of this conversation. Never mind. I looked over at Mom. Hey, are you seeing Hazel again?
She put her head down, and Dad said,
I think there was a McDonald's on the way in. We'll probably just eat there.
I looked at Mom. How was all this avoidance acceptable to her? And then I thought, how is this acceptable to me? It wasn't.
That night at dinner, while my parents were at McDonald's, I sat with the baseball guys as usual. Zach started talking about Kyle Guidry, who had gotten into Yale.
That's you next year, Steve said, pointing to me.
I shook my head hard. Nah, I said. I doubt I'd get in there. Steve shrugged.
You're that guy! You got that pompous thing, like Guidry. You're fucking perfect!
Yeah, real perfect. That's me, I said. I glanced over at Mendenhall, who knew the truth about my math test, but he wasn't paying attention.
Dude's so humble, Steve said.
Walking back to the dorm with all the guys after dinner, I felt like I could vomit up my insides. And there wasn't a person in the world, Rafe included, who could know that I was a cheater. I was a fraud. That night, as I brushed my teeth and went over my speech for the zillionth time in my head, I looked in the mirror. What happens if you have everything, but you feel nothing? Because everyone thought I was perfect, and my parents were here and proud of me, and I was about to give a speech in front of everyone I knew. And then I would be given the keys to everything I ever wanted. A scholarship that would almost certainly allow me to be the first in my immediate family to go to college and study more history and maybe become Dr. Carver, which was a lifelong goal. But there I was in the mirror, blurred by smudged specks of toothpaste and streaks of water, and no less heavy than I'd been that day at the pool with my brother, when sitting submerged on the floor seemed like a normal and fitting place to be. So I'd been less than honest. Surely I wasn't the first. A lot of guys on the baseball team and probably other teams took the answer keys. It was a means to an end. I'd cheated on one test. I'd never do it again. Someday I'd be out of this place. I'd be at school somewhere great, and maybe my dad wouldn't get me still, but it wouldn't matter because I'd be with more people who did get me. I thought about fear. About how for all these years I'd been exactly who my dad wanted me to be. And there were perks to that. Sometimes a kind word, but so many other times, nothing. And so much criticism that I believed it, bought it. I believed I was a screw-up even though I was the first in my immediate family to attend a boarding school. Even though I'd been an A student. Even though I had dreams of college. I'd gotten so many stop that foolishness looks and, well, don't get a big head about it talks that I had taken over for Dad and started giving them to myself in his place when he wasn't around. I had made sure not to get a big head.
I had followed all the rules, sometimes because I was afraid, and other times because I wasn't aware there was an alternative. Groups don't get all civilly disobedient until they realize they've been missing something. That's me. All my life, I did the good son thing because I didn't realize I had a choice.
I looked in the mirror again. I resisted the urge to clean off the glass with my forearm. I desperately wanted to see myself unencumbered, my true reflection. But I couldn't. And tomorrow I'd pay homage to a guy just like me, whom everybody loved but nobody knew. But our stories were different because I didn't have a Vietnam, and there would be life after this for me. Right? Right?
Chapter 42. Thank you, Headmaster Taylor, and thanks to the Pappas Foundation for this honor. I am humbled to even be considered for this award, and I am beyond grateful for the scholarship that is part of it. Even if what I'm about to say means I won't get the award and the scholarship, I am very grateful that it was offered to me. The audience shifted. I looked out and locked eyes with Rafe. His expression was full of love and compassion, and I smiled at him. It's probably not going to surprise you that I've spent a lot of time lately thinking about Peter Pappas. All I've heard about him for the past couple years is how brave he was. And I want to tell you, I did everything I could to understand who he was. Partially because I wanted to learn about him so I could pay homage to him, and partially because I'm a big history geek and I like to research things. Peter Pappas was, indeed, a very brave man. He fought for this country. He gave his life for our country, and that's a kind of bravery I can't even imagine. Could I put my life on the line for this country that I love? I'd like to think so, but the idea of being in a war is something I can't get my head around. I read some letters Peter sent to his family from Vietnam. When he wrote about seeing his closest friend get blown up right next to him, I realized that understanding what it feels like to be in a war is impossible unless you've been there. And there were other things I read in his letters that made me realize that as brave as Peter Pappas was, he probably wouldn't be too thrilled to know about the award being given in his name. Peter Pappas was complicated, like all of us are. When he was at Natick, he was the big man on campus. He was a star on the basketball team and the soccer team. He was a straight-A student, and he had many, many friends. He was in Model Congress. Everybody loved Peter Pappas. I'm not sure, though, that everybody really knew Peter Pappas. I met his sister, and, like her, Peter grew up in a working-class part of Dorchester. I don't know if anyone has ever mentioned that before. When I got the award, I figured he was from a wealthy family. And as I researched, I realized, of course, he wasn't rich. Wealthy kids didn't often go to Vietnam. Peter needed everyone to admire him, especially his dad. That's what his sister told me, and reading his letters, I saw that. Come to think of it, I wonder if a lot of overachievers in the world have that same need to make their parents proud. Here's something you didn't know about Peter Pappas. 2 years before he enlisted, he was an anti-war crusader. He chained himself to a fence post at a rally in front of the Massachusetts State House. He gave an impassioned argument in Model Congress about how our boys should not be dying to protect a crooked Vietnamese regime. His father was an ardent supporter of the war, and Peter hated not being on the same side as his father. So Peter changed his mind to be in line with his dad's opinions, and he volunteered to enlist at 17. And then, once he was thrust into the inhuman situation of war, he had a change of heart. I read some of his letters, and he was afraid, petrified. He wanted to come home. He wanted to live in a peaceful world. That's who Peter Pappas was. But I'm not calling him a coward.
he was the opposite of a coward. I think that expressing fear was expressing the truth, and it's hard to express the truth when the world wants you to be someone else. I guess you might be wondering why I would say all of this. I thought a lot about this, believe me. I'm not a guy of many words, and I'm not one to buck the system, but mischaracterizing a guy who is no longer with us is wrong. Peter was brave, and I do believe Peter Pappas deserves to have an award named after him. But I wouldn't want to be remembered as something I wasn't. Even if the world celebrated my memory, it's not right. What I learned studying Peter Pappas is a life lesson. It's about the rewards we get when we are who other people want us to be. Peter Pappas decided to be who his father thought he should be, and I'm not saying that being who others want you to be is a recipe for death. That's way too simple. But I do think that when we choose the easy path, where people or society reward us for being what they want us to be against who we really are, a kind of death occurs to the soul. All my life, I bought this idea that the way to live is to stay quiet. Stay serious, even if it means my soul feels dead. I bought that idea and it became mine. But today, I think the best way to live is like my good friend Toby Rylander, who chooses to be himself even if it makes his life harder in a way, because at least he's alive in his soul. I want to be like that. Myself, even when it's harder, even when it's inconvenient. Toby has taught me the value of standing up and being seen. I thank him for that. And I thank Peter Pappas for that. And I thank Rafe Goldberg for that, whom I happen to love. Being who you are means admitting when you make mistakes. And recently, I made a big mistake. It probably will mean I won't get this award, but when I think about what my soul would feel like to carry around this mistake all my life, I realize I would rather own up to it and face the consequences than act like it didn't happen and accept the award under false pretenses. On Tuesday, I cheated on a calculus test. I had never cheated before. It was a horrible choice. I felt like I needed to cheat, I guess. If I didn't cheat, I would have failed the test, and in order to be the person I've tried to be the last few years, good at everything with no real weaknesses, I felt like I had to get a good grade. I'm sorry for cheating. I let myself down, and I let the school down. I understand that I will get in trouble for it. That's fine. Starting today, I am going to be who I am and stand for what I stand for, so I don't ever have to make a choice like that again, one that goes against my morals in order to be what people want me to be. It's a different situation, but I think Peter Pappas would totally get what I'm talking about. Thank you. Chapter 43. As I walked off stage, the lack of applause was palpable. The awkward silence stretched out for what felt like a full minute, but was probably just 5 seconds or so, and I stood in the wings of the auditorium alone, wondering what was next. Headmaster Taylor came backstage first. He was shaking his head, clearly annoyed.
"You probably just cost yourself your scholarship, and worse, you may have just cost the school this award," he said.
I lowered my head. "I know."
"Selfish and not smart," he said. "Very disappointed in you."
I didn't respond, and I didn't look up.
"How did you cheat? Where did you get the answers to the test?"
I shook my head. I wasn't interested in involving anyone else in my drama.
"Consider yourself suspended," he said. "You won't be going to Florida either. I'll talk to your parents right now. You'll come back a week after everyone else, and this will go on your personal record."
He stomped off, and I kept my head down. I'd known that could happen, would happen even, but hearing that I wasn't going to Fort Lauderdale with my teammates hit me somewhere tender. Then I thought about Pappas, and that made me feel better.
I wondered if there really was an afterlife, and if he'd know that I restored the truth about him. I had to believe he'd be glad I'd done it. And it occurred to me. All this time, I'd been thinking about how Pop